Whether it's a gun, a blade, or a bomb, an assassination is rarely just about silencing an opponent. Usually, it's about trying to change the course of history with a single murder. And sometimes, it works. Join me, Aslan Pahari, for Assassins, where we tell the stories behind some of the world's most startling assassinations. Find Assassins on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just before we start, this episode contains some strong language.
The Kilkeven Hotel is this beautiful old two-story country pub. It's got this hand-carved wooden bar top and a wide wraparound balcony, and the outside is painted pink.
It was really busy in the public bar and out the front, but nobody else was sort of sitting really in the dining room.
A few days before Jack disappeared, Sue is sitting in the pokey room. Here's how she remembers what happens next.
I was sitting at the pokies playing the pokies, and this young fella comes in, right?
He's tall and cradling a beer. The room is narrow with just one row of pokies, and if Sue leans back from a pokey chair, she can actually touch the wall behind her. It's only polite that she strikes up a conversation.
He said, "Hello, how are you?" And I said, "Hi, darling, how are you?" And he was sitting there for a few minutes. He was real fidgety. He was trying to drink his beer, but he didn't really want it. And he put like a $50 note in the pokies and just sort of hit it real quick and it was gone.
She says the young man looks nervous.
He was struggling to drink his beer. He kind of looked like he was going to bring it up at the same time he was swallowing it. That's how stressed he looked to me. We were talking for probably about 20 minutes, maybe even a little bit longer.
Sue looks the bloke up and down. He's pretty fit looking, but he seems frightened. He tells Sue there's someone waiting for him in the car and he's been taken to meet some serious people.
"I don't even really drink," he said, "but I've got a beer because I'm so nervous." And they're into their drug dealers and shit, and he doesn't want to go. He's scared. And I said, "Well, you should listen to yourself, sweetie, and go." He goes, "I just want to go home to mum." And I said, "Well, you know what? You should listen to your stomach and go home to your mum, darling. Your tummy's telling you something's not right. Something's not right." And then he just gave me a hug and thanked me for listening to him.
What did he say when he hugged you?
He just said, "Thank you for listening to me. You're a beautiful lady." I said, "Take care," and then that was it.
Sue is convinced that young man was Jack McLennan. And before the week was done, Jack would go missing, never to be seen again.
How was your feeling when you saw the bulletins about Jack going missing?
I cried and cried and cried and cried and cried.
It's hard to know how much of what Sue is remembering has been clouded by what happened since, and whether the young man she saw really was Jack McLennan. I've spoken to people who think Jack did go to the Kilkeven pub in the week before he disappeared, possibly looking for a room, but they just couldn't be sure which night. I also checked with the pub's owner. He took a look in the pub's accommodation logbook for me, and he said while Jack's name isn't in it, it's still possible he came in to ask about a room. When it asked about the hotel CCTV, the pub owner said it's long since been deleted. But whatever the case, Sue is convinced it was Jack, and she has lasting regrets about that night.
He never told me his mate's name, and I am so fucking angry at myself for not asking.
She and her husband Shane asked me not to use their last names. They say it's not safe. Not in a small town where everyone talks.
"You don't live near this town, it's very dangerous."
"Yeah, well, we live in a little quiet country town, you know what I mean?
Don't be dead, just like Jack."
She says, if you open your mouth, you're dead, just like Jack. It's not just Sue who thinks Jack might have got tangled up in something. Lots of people I talk to in the area think he stumbled into something dangerous. But what kind of danger? And who was he with? I reckon maybe my best hope of finding out lies with the people he saw on that last day before he disappeared. I'm Rob Bergen, and this is What Became of Jack, the latest season of Unravel. First of all, I just want to say thanks to all of you who have got in touch or commented on the podcast. I know a lot of you are really invested in this, and your feedback honestly means a lot to us. I've noticed quite a few of you have heard a rumour that Jack might have ended up at Kimbombi Falls, which is a remote scenic area about 30 k's from Fix Crossing. Don't worry, we've heard those stories too, and we are looking into them. We will talk about that in a later episode. In the meantime, if you know something about what happened that night, or if you want to send us a message, get in touch at unraveltruecrime@abc.net.au. Or you can always call Crime Stoppers on 1800 333 000. Okay, for now, back to the investigation. And I want to focus for a second on a short piece of CCTV footage that captured Jack on the day he went missing. It's from a bottle shop near the middle of Mergen, that town around 5 minutes up the road from Fix Crossing. All right, I'm just going to load up this video. As far as I know, this is the only bit of footage that exists of Jack from that day that's been released to the public. And I'll just hit play now. From the right side of screen, in comes this blue Toyota Kluger SUV. And Jack hops out of the passenger side with a black cap on back to front, camouflage shirt, and he's got black shorts and a white pair of trainers. He enters the bottle shop with a guy of similar height in an orange shirt, blue shorts. Jack's leaning on the counter. He's kind of flexing his triceps and he's so relaxed. His mate's paying for the drinks that they've bought. And while his mate walks out the front, Jack remains behind talking briefly to the cashier, gives him a thumbs up, and the guy that works at the bottle shop almost follows him out to the front door in a really friendly way. Everybody aside from Jack in this video is blurred, but really, they're the key pieces of the puzzle. I feel like I have to drive back out to Mergen, visit this exact bottle shop, and speak to the exact same guy that served Jack that day.
Sorry to bother you, I'm Rob Bergen with the ABC. I've been working on that Jack McLennan story.
I asked the guy behind the counter at the bottle shop if I can speak to whoever served Jack that day. He points over to a stocky guy with short red hair and a friendly face. He looks around the same age as Jack. But I can see now is not a good time. It's a Friday and the place is packed.
Probably do it tomorrow morning if you want.
Tomorrow morning, okay. Sweet, mate.
It's actually 2 days later when we eventually catch up at the local tennis courts. Jeez, that's got hot. We sit on a retaining wall, squinting into the sun.
Yeah, the sun's pretty warm today. Mergen's not a cool place until winter.
Two ginger blokes sitting outside.
As I look around us, I feel like I'm surrounded by physical reminders of Jack's mysterious disappearance. I can see where Jack left his car, never to return to it. I can see the hedge where his hat was found. And I can see the bottle shop where Jack came on his last day with that bloke in the car, the one whose face was smudged out on the CCTV footage. Kyle's the guy who served them, and he's a little nervous as we start the interview.
I might get you to start by saying, hi, my name is...
Hi, my name's Kyle. I've been living in Mergen for about 20 years of my life. Never done this stuff before, so...
You're right. And so the Friday that he comes in... Can you remember much about that day beforehand?
It seemed to be a normal day so far. It was just the normal run-of-the-mill Friday. I can't remember exactly what they bought, but I think it was only like a six-pack. I think it was only a beers.
Kyle recognised Jack. They actually used to work together.
I worked with him in Kingaroy. Probably worked with him for around 3 months. And then I just kept in contact with him over Snapchat and Instagram and stuff like that. Kept the friendship going afterwards.
He said Jack seemed fine that day.
He seemed pretty calm and collected. He just seemed the normal old bubbly Jack. He didn't seem to have anything like off about him. He didn't seem a bit scared or anything like that. He seemed to be just about himself.
On the CCTV, it looks like he kind of looks back at you and has like his arm expression seems like really friendly, like you two.
Yeah, yeah, we were joking around the whole time he was in there and just having a good catch up.
Since that day, And since the investigation into Jack's disappearance has stalled, the local rumour mill has been in overdrive. Even Cole, who only briefly crossed paths with Jack on his last day, has been dragged into the swamp.
I've had a few people come in and accuse me and say that it wasn't... I couldn't see that he was distressed, but the Facebook messages.
What do you think about that stuff?
Well, you never have the full story. If you're not there, you're not going to know.
Did you know the person he was with at all?
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably best left alone, yeah.
I asked Cole some more about this guy, but he says he really doesn't want to talk about it. And we finish up the interview. I completely understand why Cole wants to be careful about what he says and why so many people I've interviewed only want to be known by their first name. The online chatter about Jack's disappearance just seems to be getting more and more full on the longer that he's missing. There's the Facebook page his family set up, but then there are others that have sprung up since. Like, there's one dedicated to following missing persons cases, which has jumped onto Jack's story. There's another couple that look at crime in the region, and a handful more that are following along. There are some well-meaning people, no doubt, but there's also a lot of overly morbid discussion about the case, as well as some made-up stuff and unfair accusations. People appear under pseudonyms and they accuse each other of being involved. There are these big online fights that threaten to eventually spill offline. But these Facebook pages occasionally get something right, and pretty early on they seem to have worked out who Jack was with at the bottle shop. In the footage, the guy's face is blurred out, but you can pretty clearly see what car he's driving. And in these small towns, everyone knows what car everyone else drives. This car in particular was driven by Jack's mate, Chris Duke, the same mate that he ended up with out at Fix Crossing, the last known person to see him alive. I track down a phone number for Chris and I give him a call.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up.
Yeah, hi Chris, it's Rob Bergen calling from ABC. I'm just following up the Jack McLennan story.
Call after call and a bunch of texts, I just can't get Chris to answer the phone. And when I ask around, no one seems to know where Chris has gone. All I can work out is he's definitely left town. I need to find out more about Chris. But the Facebook pages following Jack's case, they're filled with all sorts of speculative claims. They're accusing him of knowing more than he's letting on without any apparent evidence. When I ask around about him, it seems plenty of people know him or know of him. Some say he's got a temper, that he's a drug user, that he hangs around with bad people, but no one wants to do an interview about him. So it's hard to know what to believe.
It's Rob again from ABC. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate.
One person who was happy to do an interview was Shane. First name only, of course.
Tell me about how you came to know of Chris Duke and what sort of happened.
I've seen him getting around because he was wearing a white Stetson hat.
Just a warning here, Shane doesn't mind swearing a bit, or actually quite a lot.
Because he's into Rodeo, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he might be into a bit of Rodeo circuit shit. He thinks he's a cowboy or whatever.
We heard from Shane earlier in this episode. It was his wife Sue who thinks she ran into Jack in the pokey room at the Kilkeven pub. Shane's never actually spoken to Chris, but his two sons know him, and one of them gave Shane a colourful story about Chris. It takes a bit of telling, but it's pretty revealing. So a few years ago, Shane's away on a trip to Brisbane, and he asks his son Kanan to house-sit at his place and look after the dog. Then out of the blue, Shane gets a phone call from Kanan.
I was on my way home and Kanan rang me and said, "Fucking hell, Dad, I've just had this fucking prick here."
He tells Shane someone's just rocked up to the front door totally uninvited.
He didn't hide his name in any way. "My name's Chris Duke. How you going, man? My name's Chris Duke, you know," and he was just fucking shit-faced. He came here to try and score some pot because somebody in town told him that I smoke pot. He must have been at the pub or something, asking around.
Shane doesn't deny that he smokes a bit of weed. or that he's got a reputation around town. And actually, it'd be pretty hard for him to deny it, because just a few weeks after this interview, he pleaded guilty to possession of nearly a kilo of marijuana. At the front door, Chris is insistent.
And Kane's been on the other, I get the fuck with your name, is fuck off, I don't know you. Your parents aren't home.
According to Shane, Chris won't listen.
And he's going, I want to get some weed, but I'm coming in there. And he's going, fucking white fuck you are. Go away, I don't know you. I'm just watching the house, go away.
The way Shane tells it, Chris tries to barge his way into the house and just stands there like he's waiting for Kanan to run off and grab him some pot. Shane says Kanan's left thinking,
what the fuck am I going to do with this fucking idiot, you know what I mean?
But Shane has a dog named Lexi, and Lexi is not afraid of a fight.
She was a little curly cross cattle dog, and she didn't give a fuck. She liked biting, can't say. I'm saying she probably bit him. Maybe a couple of times.
Shane says Chris starts kicking the dog back and Kanan won't stand for it.
And the dog was going sick. He thought he was going to hurt the dog, so he said, fuck you, mate, you're not hurting my dog. And he went out and had a crack at him.
They end up out the front of the house going at each other.
Ended up on the ground having a wrestle. Kanan got behind him, found one of the rocks surrounding the garden and just smashed him in the fucking head with it.
After the fight settles down, the boys share a bong and go their separate ways. It was a pretty nasty brawl though, not one they could walk off, and they both land in the emergency room because of it.
He ended up in Gympie Hospital that night, that Chris Duke. Or so did Kanan, they both ended up in Gympie Hospital.
I've spoken to Kanan, and he agreed that he and Chris had a fight, and that this is basically how it went down. But it seems like that's not the only trouble that Chris Duke's been caught up in. When I first searched Queensland court records, I saw Chris Duke's been in and out of the court system since at least 2014. The charges are for things like driving under the influence, petty theft, and since I first looked, willful damage has been added to the list. He was once reported to police for allegedly threatening a shop attendant and stealing cigarettes. The business responded by plastering a still from their CCTV camera all over Facebook. And in that image, Chris can be seen wearing a pink beanie shaped like a pig. Virtually everyone's telling me how Jack was such a clean living guy. So what I can't figure out is, how did he end up hanging out with this bloke? And when I asked Jack's old landlord and boss, Trent, about it, he paints a very different picture of Chris.
Mate, like literally I worked with Chris for 3.5 years and I never seen one bit of aggression at work. Nothing.
Trent wasn't just Jack's friend and supervisor. He was Chris's too.
So I basically put him through his whole apprenticeship as well. We originally worked for another builder together.
He says he got to see Chris up close. And in his mind, Chris was a hard worker, willing to learn, and he didn't take shortcuts.
The only thing that held him back was probably his home life was a bit complicated in certain times, and that's where you'd see a reflection of his work. When he was having trouble at home, he was no good at work. When his home life was good, he was one of the best employees you could ever have. And I know for a fact that if I rang him and I needed help, he would drop everything and come, because you know at the end of the day, he's only got his apprenticeship because of me. He's still a good person.
Working with both Chris and Jack, Trent got to see how the two of them started off as workmates and then became friends, even though Jack was in his late 20s and Chris was mid-30s with his fourth kid on the way.
I did notice they were getting closer, sort of like when we started off working together, you know, we would... you know, just have lunch together or whatever like that.
The two of them talked about Jack's problems with Carly, but like a lot of blokes, they didn't get too deep about their feelings.
Then I did notice if Chris had to go to town to get some lunch, Jack would go with. So they were getting closer, but still I'd never seen them outside of work sort of catching up.
In the weeks leading up to Jack's disappearance, Chris had become less reliable. And whatever the reason for it, Trent says it's not something you'd ever notice with Jack.
And what was your reaction when you found out that they were hanging out that Friday night?
I mean, they were two people that have had volatile relationships. So, I mean, it's not didn't shock me.
Trent first heard Jack had gone missing when he got a phone call from Chris.
I would have received the phone call about maybe 10:30 in the morning.
Chris sounded panicked. Jack wasn't answering his phone, and Chris wanted to know if Trent had seen Jack.
He explained that they were drinking at Fix Crossing, and then Jack just disappeared. He said, "Oh, we can't find him." I said, "I mean, what do you can't? You can't find him." He goes, "Oh, we were at the car, and then I just looked up, and he was gone."
Trent says he told Chris, "Sorry, mate, I haven't seen him." Monday's a public holiday, so Trent doesn't see Chris until Tuesday, when he shows up late to work. Chris seems worse for wear, and it's not just your average hangover.
It's like he hadn't slept for a couple of days, and then he was ordered off-site, basically just to go and sort yourself out. He was on his final warning the weeks prior to that, because he was just getting real unreliable, just not rocking up. When he was at work, he was good, but he just, you know, you're trying to run a construction site and do stuff on schedule, and when people aren't rocking up, soon got the shits with it all.
Trent realises they're going to have to let Chris go. He can't just be showing up late for work. But it's not just that. It's becoming common knowledge around the region that Chris Duke is likely the last known person to have seen Jack alive.
Like, so it's not, you know, not something my boss wanted to be involved in it anyway. And I've never really asked, Chris either, you know, apart from he sort of just said to me, you know, that he just disappeared, like he was there that night in the car, and then all of a sudden Jack was gone, and that's all he's ever really said. And that's why Chris sort of, you know, just walked away, because literally he's the only real witness.
To begin with, this was the dominant story I heard about Chris. He was the one with Jack that night. He had a slightly dodgy track record, and when people spoke to him the day after Jack disappeared, some say he sounded high. So it seems pretty clear that drugs of some kind were involved that night. But would Jack have taken drugs too? In the weeks and months before he disappeared, no one spent as much time with Jack as Carly, his then girlfriend.
One of the themes that's emerged over the course of the investigation, this story, is Jack's use of drugs. What would you say was his situation?
Jack was very weird. Like, he'd go through stages where he'd just drink for like a couple of days, or for a week he'd just drink, and then all of a sudden he'd stop, and it wouldn't happen again for months.
Carly says she and Jack occasionally smoked pot together when they went out, but it wasn't a regular thing, and it was never in the home.
Otherwise he didn't touch stuff, and he didn't touch other drugs, because he knew I was not about that. I didn't like it. I wouldn't accept it. You know, I'm all for if we're going out drinking and you want to smoke a bit of pot, or you want to, you know, whatever. But yeah, it was never more than pot. So if he was to smoke anything, or there was a pipe, I would know about it.
But Carly says before she and Jack met, he smoked pot more often. And during a phase, it seems like he'd tried harder drugs.
Jack, you know, had his party days, I'm sure, you know, drink, did all kinds of things, and you know, Jack was someone who would try anything, and he was very trusting.
When I asked Carly about Chris, she says she only knew him vaguely.
I knew that he was a bit, I don't know what you call it, all over the shop or something, or a bit different, with like how Jack would describe him. You know, he was a bit of a character.
But when it comes to what Jack got up to with Chris the night he disappeared, she says she's only guessing.
Like I always say, yeah, he was probably upset that night, you know, drank, did some drugs, and who knows what happened. But he was probably just trying to have some fun and just, you know, whatever, and it's just gone bad. I just know that Jack made the wrong decision to hang out with the wrong people, and that's what has happened.
I asked Jack's dad, Ross, about his son's drug use, and he says he also spoke to Carly about it.
I said to his girlfriend, is there any way, because they were living together, is there any way that Jack was doing this under your nose? Was he going out to the shed? Was he? And she said, no. Nah. She said, I would have known. And that was lovely to hear.
Ross knows there were harder drugs like meth in the area, but when anyone asked him and Kelly about whether Jack could have been taken anything like that, the answer was pretty simple.
We know that element exists in a lot of towns. I mean, it's just the way it is. But we were declaring, well, our son wasn't caught up in that.
But Ross was forced to question how well he knew his son when one day, after Jack disappeared, he got a call from the police. He says police told him they'd interviewed Chris Duke about his recollection of the night and that he'd said something about Jack.
The police said to me, oh, well, if he's had, according to Chris Duke, he had 2 points.
2 points, as in 0.2 of a gram of methamphetamine. Ross was trying hard to catch up.
And I said, well, what's that? What's the point? Is that 2 grams? And he said, no, 2 points. And I said, is that a lot to have? And he goes, oh, yeah, especially if you swallow it. So I was thinking, what the fuck's going on?
When Ross told me this, on the one hand, I was shocked. According to him, the police are saying Jack was on methamphetamine or meth the night that he disappeared. And 2 points of meth, that's not just a dabble. And it's more than enough to make you behave out of character. What's more, it goes totally against this clean living image of Jack that everyone's talked to me about. But you know, on the other hand, I was thinking, I can actually kind of relate to this sort of behaviour. When I was around the same age as Jack, I had some intense relationships of my own come to a jarring end. I also know that as a young man, when you're feeling lost and disillusioned, it can make you do some crazy shit, like take drugs you normally wouldn't. Not many people know this about me, but that's exactly what I did in my mid-20s. I had some fun moments, but also some big lows that went with it, and I definitely put myself in a vulnerable position more than once. I can see how this might be what happened to Jack. I keep trying Chris Duke. I've heard that he might be mustering cattle in North Queensland, but no one seems to know exactly where. I was resigned to putting in the occasional phone call, hoping that he'd answer, but ending up with the same result as always.
Your call has been forwarded to voicemail.
I was more surprised than anyone when finally, after nearly 6 months of trying, he picked up my call.
Hello?
Hey, it's Rob from ABC. Just seeing if this is Chris.
Yeah, it is, mate.
Hey, mate. It's obviously been working on the Jack story for a while and just trying to establish fact from fiction, because it seems like there's a lot of stuff swirling around. So, seeing if you could tell it.
All that stuff on Facebook, mate, I don't even know where they come up with the shit.
Yeah.
Listen, my story is I've worked with the detectives and the CIB as much as I can. At the end of the day, I don't even know where he went. You know, like, I don't know. He left me. But I've worked with the CIB, giving them everything I can. And basically, because of all the shit fight they've created over Facebook and everything, I've lost work, I've lost jobs, I've fucking, yeah, it's just been an absolute nightmare. So as soon as the detectives figure out what the hell happened, then I'll come out with my story.
And so the last time you definitely saw him was like 10 o'clock at Fix Crossing, around there.
Yeah, around that time, mate, yeah.
Yep. And how did he disappear?
I've got no fucking idea. That's what I mean. I turned around and packed all my shit up and he was gone. And that's as far as I'm going to go with it, mate. I'm sorry, but I've gone over this so many times with everybody and I've had enough now, mate.
I do my best to convince Chris to stay on the phone. I haven't even had a chance to ask him about the drugs.
We can kind of correct the record if it's incorrect. So I'm trying to, you know, trying to do the best to establish what is fact and what is fiction.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or maybe
that's good, mate. At least there's someone out there trying to do it the right way.
But I have to settle for just trying to keep the relationship open.
At a later stage, maybe if you just want to drop me a text when you're happy to talk more.
Yeah, definitely, mate.
Okay. Thanks, mate, Chris.
All right. Take it easy. Catch up.
You too. Bye.
After that, he stops answering my calls again. I've got so many questions I still want to ask a Chris, but he does sound pretty believable. I've been told for decades as a journalist to remain open to all possibilities, to follow the hard evidence. But I've seen nothing presented that implicates him in Jack's disappearance. Police have never declared Chris or anyone else a suspect or even a person of interest in their investigation. So if I want to get closer to the truth, for now, I think I've got to explore other avenues. I already told you about Jack's wallet, the one that was found nearly totally empty out in the olive grove near Fix Crossing. Well, I later learned that something else was found inside that wallet. I was chatting with Jack's dad, Ross, when he revealed to me that one of the few things left in there was a small plastic bag. The kind of bag you put drugs in. The kind of bag that can get you into all sorts of trouble. It's another thing that reinforces this other version of Jack. The one that sounds like he was on the gear the night that he disappeared. It made me think, if Chris Duke doesn't know what happened to Jack, maybe someone else he saw that night knows more. And you know who else Jack might have seen? Whoever he got this little plastic bag from. That's next episode on What Became of Jack, the latest season of Unravel. This season of Unravel is intended to be listened to as a whole. If you haven't heard all the episodes, you shouldn't draw any conclusions because you haven't heard all sides of the story yet.